Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, worldwide. And I'm delighted to welcome somebody who is a household name throughout Ireland and, for that matter, wherever Irish broadcast takes place throughout the world. He's Charlie Berg, who spent some 38 years in RTE in Ireland, Radio Television Éireann, and Ireland's national broadcaster has been, he's been chief news correspondent in Washington, D.C., and Charlie is actually in New York, primarily to not only attend the Fitzpatrick Hotel Group annual Ethna and Paddy Fitzpatrick Memorial Fund golf, but is also friends, somebody who has had an amazing track record, an icon, indeed, and was before, indeed, a disastrous disease surfaced. And I want to welcome, first of all, Charlie, but I want to speak with Charlie's wife, Claire. And Claire, just want to bring you to the last October, only mere 7 months ago, and the diagnosis of Charlie's condition was indeed something which would have been shocking to anybody, and for most of us, we wouldn't know very much about motor neuron. Tell us about that particular, that particular shock, and how that news affected not only Charlie, but the entire family, and shocked a nation, and shocked, a world that knew of Charlie and followed his career.
Yeah, no, I mean, when we went in October 23rd, I think it was, we went into Beaumont Hospital. Charlie always thought he had motor neuron disease, but we didn't believe him. We kept saying, you know, you don't have it, you know, it's something else, maybe it's Lyme's disease, you know, we just didn't want to believe it, maybe. So we went in, and when we were told, it was absolutely devastating. And, you know, we asked the question, how long, you know?
Yes.
And we were told Charlie probably had 2 to 3 years. They were very, like, matter of fact. And, yeah, it was devastating. So we cried all the way home. Mm-hmm. So we looked all the way home. And, Colin Murray. Do you know Colin Murray, who used to work on RT?
Yes.
Colin Murray
suffered
motor and neuron disease. Mm-hmm. And that's how Charlie first came up. That's when we first got to know. So Charlie used to visit Colin. And, you know, so he has seen how progressive the disease it is. And I know we're devastated, but, you know, we're trying to get through it. And Charlie, like, what he has is called bulbar. So it starts in your voice and your swallow and, you know, obviously respiratory. So that is the part of Charlie that he has, part of motor neuron disease that he has. So, yeah, it's devastating for all of us. But, you know.
Before we get into friends doing somewhat of a profile on Charlie Berg, first of all, I would like to welcome somebody again who we've all admired, an icon in broadcasting, and the face of Charlie Berg and on television. Although Charlie, well, first of all, you're very welcome. Now, with respect to your voice and losing your voice, I would assume that some days may be better than others, but is that something, say, and and on the scale from 1 to 10, is losing the voice something fairly devastating?
Well, the first thing to be said that here in the United States, motor neurone is called ALS.
Okay.
It is known as the 1,000-day disease because most people who are diagnosed with it live no longer than 3 years. It is unfortunately a terminal illness. Yes, I got my diagnosis last October, but I had symptoms going back to last March. The things I first noticed were problems with my voice, in particular twitching in my arms. Sometimes neurologists have difficulty diagnosing it.
You know, the voice we've just heard there is that of Charlie Bird. Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask our host here in Fitzpatrick Hotel to explain for me, because I grew up in the wind-up gramophone era, and there's a small, rather small little gadget on the desk here. But I think that perhaps if I ask Claire, what are we listening to when... Is that something that maybe you can explain it to us?
What happened when we went to Beaumont Hospital, they told us we'd have to bank Charlie's voice. And what that means is for anyone, if they're told they have motor neurone disease and it's vulvar, they need to record their voice while they can still speak. So with Charlie, because there was 38 years of Charlie Bird's voice out there, I was able to, because I work in RT, I was mm-hmm. able to put together all the audio from the documentary that he did, news reports, radio shows, radio programs, and I had hours of footage. So what I did is I cut all Charlie's audio so that it was clean and sent it to this company called Merino. What's it called? Merino? Yeah, Merino Software. And they literally developed this app. So they took all of Charlie's voice, got, I think it's called the algorithms, worked out how Charlie, so it's actually all his words, they put it together, gave us this app, so Charlie can type, and literally, you know, he can type what he wants to say, he can speak, and then it plays, but it's not live. So Charlie can't type and speak, he has to type it, and then he hits play. So that's how it works, but it's his voice. And it's amazing, because I think if it wasn't Charlie's voice, if it was just like a robotic voice, we wouldn't be able to relate to him. So for us and his family and his grandkids and our friends, like Fitzy here, it's lovely to be able to hear Charlie's voice and not some computerized voice, because it feels real, you know. So, and it's better for you, Charlie, as well, to hear your own voice, you know, definitely.
Yes.
Unfortunately, in my case, it took well over 6 months before I got my bad news. Oftentimes, people might think they have Parkinson's disease. To be very honest, I would exchange my MND for Parkinson's. At present, there is no cure for motor neurone disease. Yes, a lot of research is going on to try and find a cure. I am not certain how many people in the United States get in, but the figures in Ireland are as follows. Around 400 people are diagnosed every year. That is really just over one person every day. There are different types of the disease which affects different parts of the body. I have what is called bulbar, which first affects my speech and my swallow. I still have movement in my legs, arms, and am not confined to a wheelchair. But it can get progressively worse. There are exceptions. Some people with MND live longer than 3 years. I don't know how long I will survive for. But I do know a lot of medical research work is being done here in the United States to try and find a cure.
You know, as we listen to Charlie Bird, I think one of the fascinating aspects for those who feel the devastation of the perhaps One of the devastating aspects of neuron disease, motor neuron, is the fact that the voice, that losing your voice has to be, again, not only debilitating, but also one of the probably scariest for most of us to even think about it, never mind going through it. But I want to, Charlie's interpreter here, Claire, can indeed, you know, first of all, both of us, I think, have to smarten up, because this is as clear as a bell. We're able to hear Charlie as he is and has been. But I tell you, most people, not just in the United States, but most people throughout the world, may have just read the news or heard the news, and would then expect that Charlie, that you, that your family would indeed be supportive, of course. But I don't think anybody or any of us would have imagined that, as one might expect with the terminal disease, with the devastating condition, that anybody would expect that Charlie Bird, and throughout the world he is often referred to as our Charlie Bird, would indeed, you know, you mentioned coming home in the car and having tears. They didn't last very long, and as we always, you know, again, revered Charlie, even the best of us would have thought, okay, Shinne, that's it, and, you know, we wish him luck and, you know, send, you know, good vibes and prayers that he will just have some quality of life in whatever time is left.
You have seen Charlie's change over the last
year. Yeah.
Okay. Enters, friends, somebody, you know, Charlie Bird might be extremely well known in Ireland. Ireland couldn't afford two Charlie Birds, so they sent John Fitzpatrick over to us. And then John, of course, is a philanthropist, hotelier, former chairman of the Ireland Funds, the American Ireland Funds, and west of the Shannon, we might say that John is stuck into everything. You're welcome. You're welcome, my friend.
Adrian, how are you? And great to be
here. Charlie Bird gives you a lot of credit for, you know, helping him and to, you know, get on board as a friend to help him during this period of time. You, by your own admission, say that he did a hell of a lot more for you, in the sense that he showed you in particular that many of us may think, you know, that luck is down and we have, you know, life can be hell altogether. But your meeting with Charlie, your friendship with Charlie began in earnest when?
Well, way back, I mean, I used to see Charlie come to the hotel, and I got to know him that way. We'd have dinner the odd time, but it had come and go, but we just stayed in touch more of a business. But I think where we really got friendly was at the beginning of COVID. And I remember checking my Facebook page one night, because at those days we'd nothing else to do. We were just checking everything, sitting at home on our own. And I'd never check Facebook. I went into it one night and I saw a message from Charlie Bird. Now, I haven't spoken to Charlie maybe in 2 or 3 years before that, you know, because, you know, he'd retired. And I just answered him. I looked at the message and in it was, he said, "How you fits?" He says, I thought it was very strange. He said, "Do you, any of your brothers live in Ashford?" In Wicklow, and I'm going back, and I said to him, "Hi, Charlie. No, none of them do, but actually, I do." And I said, "I just bought a house about a year previously." And so we ended up making a phone call, got together, and he said, "We realised we're about a mile and a half from each other." And in those early days in COVID, I was privileged enough to be able to travel home. Because as we know, being Irish here, if you had an Irish passport, unless you had an Irish passport, you couldn't get in. But also, you couldn't get back to the States unless you had an American one. So I was lucky I had dual. So I came back, but we still had a quarantine. But I'd met Charlie, and this is when you couldn't go more than 5 kilometres. Well, some of us couldn't go more than 5 kilometres from our house. So I met Charlie, and he introduced me to Ashford in Wicklow. Because I used to go there for a few days and leave, and he was like a tour guide, bring me all around, show me all the places. We ended up walking the beach in Colchester every time I came back and things like that. And then Claire, you know, came in as well and cooked some lovely dinners for me when I had no, because I don't cook. I hate cooking. And we got to really close to each other, and we all did, and we had a great time. And that's when I started walking with Charlie, and didn't realize, but Charlie walked 15 miles every day with Tiger and his dog. And he'd come up on a Sunday morning, but I'd usually come back the weekend, and we'd go for a walk and back and have, you know, tea and thing, and Claire would be great and could walk with us, and we just had dinner. But that's when the friendship really, really started, and it's been ever since. And, you know, I was around the time Charlie was diagnosed, and it was a shock to us all. And you know, so it's, but I think we all have our issues, and we all bitch about what we have. But when we have, and then we see what Charlie's gone through and how he's fighting it, and, you know, we'll come to it, I'm sure you'll come to it, but how, what, he was very down, Claire was very down, but they turned a horrible situation into something very special. And I think that's when the next stage came.
And Charlie, in terms of, again, taking a lot of the focus, you know, off himself, and deciding that one of the contributions that he could make would be to fundraise. And during that period, Charlie, where did that motivation, where did that declare?
Basically, we were on the Late Late Show when Charlie got his diagnosis, and Ryan had asked Charlie, like, you know, what would be, you know, one of your bucket lists, whatever. So Charlie had said that he wanted to climb Kirkpatrick with a few of his friends from a WhatsApp group that he has, and literally Twitter went mental. That's all I can say. We were on the Late Late, we cut to the break, and Ryan went, "I think the whole Dalmatian wants to climb Kirkpatrick with you." It just took off. And Charlie is amazing, because it's never and never has been about himself. It's always about others. And his main motto was reaching out the hand of friendship to everyone. So he didn't want it just to be focused about himself, going through motor neuron. It was to help other people. And one of the other, like, you know, Pieta, which is, I suppose, Solace is the equivalent over here. Charlie has known people have committed suicide, etc., and he wanted to do it for two different charities. Obviously, one for Motor Neuron, and the other one was for Pieta. And it kind of just kicked off, and before we knew it, we had a team of people around us to help us get the campaign going, get the messaging out, that people were to climb their mountains, wherever it was, all around Ireland, the world. Everyone just came on board. Like, the nation loved Charlie. They do. They've always loved him, because it's never been about himself. It's about helping other people. And I think that's kind of where it came about, you know? And it's amazing. Jesus.
I'm going to fast forward from that just to, again, friends, this recording is happening actually 2 days ago in Fitzpatrick Hotel, where, again, we get a chance to welcome Charlie Bird, of course, and his wife Claire, in New York City, but this is not a holiday. It's for yet another fundraising event. And on Monday, John Fitzpatrick, the hotelier Fitzpatrick, who owns, of course, Fitzpatrick Hotel Group in New York, will host the 23rd annual Ethnic and Paddy Fitzpatrick Memorial Golf Fund, which set up by John and his parents. And on this Monday at Sleepy Hollow Country Club, John, you will again add to what has got to be close to $5 million for charity. On both sides of the Atlantic, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, Adrian, it's the 28th. I might have to send you the Specsavers.
But well, you know, time goes when you're having fun.
But, no, joking apart, yes, look, it is a serious sort of thing. He's... It's the 28th anniversary, and, you know, we've had a rough 3 years that we've all had, and to get everybody back again and resurrect to continue on the thing, because we all know, more so than anybody, but all charities and all organizations suffered so much through COVID that they lost government granting. Everything went just didn't happen, and most of the grant funding comes from private fundraisers, things like that. So it just... as I said, we have five or six different charities which specialise or organisations, and one is Integrated Education, which I am happy to say is now being recognised properly in Northern Ireland, and that's another day and another story. But yeah. The Coromila, Barrettstown, and all that. But, you know, Charlie, one of the talks we had before he did this great climb, Crowpatrick, was we always planned, say, look, come on out for a week. And see, get out, yeah, and have a rest and get away. And Claire and myself and Charlie were organising it. But as the weeks went on, then Crowpatrick came, and, you know, he got so bogged down with that. And then it finally said, come on, Charlie, you got to come out. And we realised he was going to come out the week before my golf. And I just said to him, you know what? It just clicked with me then. I said, he's done so much for, you know, Motor Neuron in Ireland and Pieta House. I said, but there's Irish people living in New York. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's when I got more close to Sullis House and what they did for the Irish. And especially, we all know, during COVID, you know, a lot of Irish couldn't, as we know, couldn't go home for the last 3 years. One of my own managers, Chris O'Sullivan, has been here for 3 years, cannot get home to see his family. But there's hundreds of people like that here, which Sullis House has said has, you know, put a demand on them, because people suffer from different things, homesick, depression, whatever it is. And I said, look, Charlie's here. And as Claire just said earlier on, Charlie always never thinks of himself. I rang him and said, not putting pressure on you, but would you like to get involved and see, can we do something for Sullis House? Well, he jumped at it. And he said, I'll stay on and we'll do it, and Claire and himself. And so now we've realised, when I've got involved with it, how much that organisation, it's out, as we know, in Queens. And it's brilliant. So Charlie jumped on it, and we're now going to put some of the money we raised towards, of course, Motor Neuron back in Ireland, but Sullis House here. And it's great to leave.
Yeah.
It's great to leave some of the money we raise here, leave it here in the Irish community. Mm. And Charlie, and it'll be part of Charlie's legacy to say, to help out here. So that's how it happened.
Two items, because I can't let it go. First of all, it's your 28th, obviously. Obviously, we were not invited to.
I think COVID. You were leaving at the COVID years.
Snubbed for 5 years. But we were over it. We're over it for now. And another favorite expression of John Fitzpatrick is not to put pressure on you. You can very well believe that when John Fitzpatrick says not to put pressure on you, you know, not to put, that's where it ends. All of a sudden you're pressured into the ground. But again, I want to ask Claire about the selection of, of climbing Crowpatrick. Now, did you or Did you run that by anybody else, or did you figure that if Charlie wants to do this, he's going to do it anyway, so there's no room for input into even in his current condition?
With regards to the client, Crowpatrick, like, we had to get a team from Westport to help us. So we had a priest called Father Charlie, who was amazing, and an Inspector Dennis Harrington, and it was like something out of Killing the Scully. They were absolutely brilliant, and literally, I work as a producer in RT, so yeah, it was amazing that we just all literally sat down and worked out what needs to be done. Because you have to go to the council, you have to go to Mayo County Council,
sure,
you can't just suddenly land at Crowpatrick and do it. Yeah. Their biggest fear was, because of charity, that thousands of people would turn up,
and they did.
But it was brilliantly organised. They didn't want people going off piste, they wanted people to walk the actual walk, because, you know, they're working on Crowpatrick, and it was the lambing season and everything, so thousands of people turned up, but they were so respectful of the walk, and everyone was there for charity. And even 50 turned up with a broken wrist with a cast on it. We have a great photo of him behind Charlie saluting the whole day with his broken fist. But people were amazing, and they turned up, but it was organised because we spent 2 months organising it, and we had a team of friends who did all the marketing. So the message was, you know, climb your own mountains and don't just come to Crowpatrick, because we couldn't have everyone there. But I mean, you know, like Daniel O'Donnell sang at the top of Crowpatrick, and that was absolutely amazing. He climbed with us, and
He didn't take a helicopter and drop in.
No, they didn't. But we did have a chopper down. My mother came down, actually, and she got into the chopper, and they flew her around the top of Crowpatrick. She's 86, and she just said, you know what, amazing. So they flew her around the top. They were fantastic. So the Air Corps, the Army Reserve, with volunteers. It was an amazing day. And everybody volunteered. Even, like, you know, Centra gave us food. We had Campbell's Pub who set it all up. We had burgers for everyone. Like, you still paid for them, but the money went to the charity. So, no, it was amazing.
It was a
fantastic
day. It was a special day.
Yeah.
Did, was there any notion, Charlie, as to what the, you know, what kind of revenue would come out of this walk? Was that something that, was there a rough figure?
1 million.
One million.
My God. And so that was fairly ambitious.
So we got 1 million, amazing. So today, this very day, we have now got 3 million.
Wow.
And that's €3 million, which
that's
is unbelievable.
More than $3.5 million.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. We couldn't. And it's actually over 3 million. So the money is still coming.
It's still coming in.
Yeah, it's still coming in. So
how did the idea and the notion that for those who could not be in Ireland and in Mayo, Faber County, or somebody, that there would be throughout the world those who'd say, we can't be there.
Yeah,
it's Charlie Bird.
Yeah.
It is something that obviously he has very strong support for, and particularly in a topic that has always been somewhat difficult to speak about here, especially if you have any Irish blood in you at all, and that is the devastating effects, not just of the victims of suicide, but of the families of those. How did that start? Did people just come volunteer? Was there, or, you know, was there a memo sent around the world saying
Charlie, the word out, and Charlie tweeted, and every time he tweeted it just went viral.
So we used his voice app. So the voice app that we've heard today from our kitchen, our kitchen dining room was our base camp for myself and Charlie for the 2 months building up to it. So from our kitchen, I would film Charlie, and he would have his message on his app, and that would go out on his Twitter. Like we obviously had a Climate Charlie like website and Facebook, but Charlie's actual Twitter account just used it. Everyone, just any messaging that went out there, people would go, okay, we need to climb our mountain somewhere else. But we did have teams of friends who worked in marketing who sent that message out. So the messaging worked. You know, and like Charlie tweeting every other day. Like, we used to do three or four videos in the kitchen with our dog Tiger and sitting on his lap, and we would just send the message out, and it spread. And like, people are good. People are genuinely good people. I think people wanted to come out of COVID and do something, you know, not just thinking about themselves, get out there and do something.
And one thing you should mention, the Dunn Stores, what they did a few years ago, that was a very good
few. Dunn Stores were amazing. Like, so they came on board, and what they do in Ireland, they do kind of a 4-day kind of campaign for you. So if you're at the tills, you can donate €2 every time you do your thing. So they raised over 250,000 is what we raised from Dunn's. It was unbelievable. Yeah. It was over a period of 4 days. They were just amazing to us. Amazing. And we have a great friendship with them now. Absolutely. Yeah. The family of Dunn's. Amazing.
No, we're going to, friends, we're going to hear from Pat McGowan. He's from Sligo, born and bred in Sligo, and he is the chairman of Solace House. And just to clarify, Pieta House in Ireland has not only been operating for quite a long time, we've had, you know, Joan Freeman on this program, you know, from the very beginning. In Pieta House, for the United States in particular, it was considered anyway to be more of a religious organization, and the decision was made on our side to rename, and for that matter, you know, to just distinguish on the American side something that people could indeed relate to. And so the decision was the Pieta House, which of course is very prominent in Ireland, would be renamed as Solace House here in the United States. We're going to get Pat McGowan will tell us you know, a good bit about that. Meanwhile, I would like you, friends, to know that my guest, and I know that many times we said special guest, but this is a very special guest here, is Charlie Bird. And for the purposes, again, friends, before we, you know, wind up the conversation here, is, I think, a demonstration of now, you know, this... until such time as I get used to, but I will refer to it, this gadget that in fact it translates your voice, but it is not, again, it's not robotic. No. This is Charlie's voice, and but there are a couple of things coming up, not the least of which Claire, again, who's the producer at RTE in Ireland, there's a book forthcoming.
There is. There's a book of photographs that we hadn't planned. When the climb was over, myself and Charlie, literally, we got a publisher and we decided to put together a kind of a diary of the day of all the photographs that were taken. So we contacted like three or four of the main photographers who kind of documented the day, and then we sent out a tweet that we wanted anyone who climbed, regardless of Ireland or America, to send in two photos. So we got over 640 photos came in from people all around the world and Ireland, and we put together this most beautiful book. And yeah, it's called Climate Charlie, obviously, and it's going out, I think, the second week in June. So we twirled it around in less than 4 weeks, and it's a stunning book. The photographs are unreal.
Now, for those, of course, who have been waiting to have books published, and you probably be in your senior years by the time, you know, the actual publication and distribution is. That's, again, a track record. We look forward very much to it. And friends, we are going to play just a track. Tell us over about it. A track from Charlie's Charlie's writings, his voice, and his message. Okay.
Hi, Charlie Burris here, my good friend Tiger. I just want to give you an update on Climb with Charlie. It is now 5 weeks since the climb, and we have now reached a staggering almost 2.5 million euros for the two charities. The team have told me that by June we will reach the breathtaking figure of 3 million euro. This stunning figure is down to you, the people all across Ireland and abroad who extended the hand of friendship. I cannot believe it. We set a target of 1 million euro, and we now expect to even go beyond 3 million. This is real love and kindness. Lastly, I want to say we have been working with Merion Press to produce a beautiful coffee table book recording the day of the climb on Croagh Patrick, but also a montage of all the other climbs and walks. We have done our best to try and include photographs from as many of these events as possible. I cannot hide from the fact that my motor neuron disease is progressively getting worse, but while I still can, I'm going to continue to extend the hand of friendship. I would love to hug you all and get Tiger to give you a lick. Thanks and stay safe.
Brilliant. And friends, it's great. $3.5 million in a short period of time. And we can add to that, of course, the Fitzpatrick golf outing, the 28th for some people. Ours is the 23rd, but which takes place on Monday. But there is something that we can do. A lot of those donations, a lot of people who climbed a mountain or in some way supported the project, which again fundraising again not only for motor neuron but also bringing awareness and support to Solace and to Solace House here, Pieta House in Ireland. Yeah, we can do something. How? Well, first maybe log on to Climb with Charlie .ie. Let the IE not throw you off. That will bring you into Ireland and into Charlie's website. We can do that, and you know, the fundraising at record speed, the book coming forward with again in June. We indeed are honored to have the icon and, of course, the hero who simply will not give up and use, again, whatever time he has left to make a difference, a huge difference. And Charlie Bird.
Good morning.
The hand of friendship is the most important thing.
The hand of friendship. And absolutely, and here's a perfect example. Charlie Bird and friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA. Coming up in our program, we're going to hear from Pat McGowan, who is again chairman of Solace House USA. And again, it's our pleasure to bring you Charlie Bird.